Welcome to the Married and Naked podcast. I'm Tammy, founder of the blog Married and Naked, certified sexuality coach and speaker.
And I'm Joel, TV host, motivational speaker, and the guinea pig to the lessons you're about to learn.
We're high school sweethearts married over 2 decades, and we're on a mission to help you create the marriage you desire and deserve. Let's get naked. Welcome to the Married and Naked podcast. Hi, everybody. Happy to be here on this beautiful day.
It is a beautiful day, Tammy, not just because I'm sitting in front of you.
It's cheesy.
I know. I just saw the collective roll of everyone's eyes that are listening. No, it's a beautiful day because the weather has turned for us here in Southern California. Those of you that live in SoCal know that it has been blazing hot this summer. It's been miserable. I know it's not just in Southern California.
All over there.
But it has turned and is nice and cool and what I call crisp in the morning. Feels so comfortable, which means it's about, I don't know, mid-60s on a walk this morning. So it was beautiful.
It is beautiful. For me, it's a little bit sad because it, to me, means that summer is beginning to be behind us. And that is my favorite time of year. And now I just feel like I've got months ahead of me of not my favorite time of year.
Which is so funny.
I'm just waiting for summer again.
Which is so funny because if you've been a listener to the podcast for any length of time, you have picked up that Tammy and I are pretty darn opposite on many things. And this is just one of the those differences. I love the fall, winter, and of course, this is not her favorite time of year.
I live for the sunshine and the warmth. Yeah. But it is beautiful. I do have to admit it is kind of a really nice relief from the heat. So I am grateful for it as well.
Absolutely. I just want to take a moment to thank you, the listener, for seeing value in this podcast and listening to this podcast and giving us the comments and writing the reviews that you have. It's been so wonderful. We've seen a spike in our listeners and we're getting comments that just make us feel like, hey, we're in the right place doing the right thing. So we thank you so much for your support. And if you haven't left us a review, please, if you feel that there is value in this, take the time to do so because it really helps us place higher in the rankings and it helps other people listen and get value out of this as well. So thank you so much for your support.
Yes, thank you. We are grateful for each and every one of you and excited each time we reach new milestones in our downloads and just it pushes us to keep going and going. Today, we're going to be digging into lessons number 7 and 8 of the 10 life-changing marriage lessons. We are coming into towards the end of this very powerful series that we've been doing. And let me tell you, these lessons are among the hardest to learn and to put into practice. These are lessons and practices that Joel and I are still working on every single day. But they are by far two of the most valuable lessons that we have learned in our marriage. Getting control of these two things in our lives changed our lives. So today we're going to talk about the attack side of marriage and arguments and the defense side of marriage and arguments. So we're going to talk about lesson number 7, which is learning that blame doesn't serve a marriage in any way. And lesson number 8, is learning that defensiveness doesn't either. And the reason we're combining these lessons is because obviously they go hand in hand with each other. Blame is a form of defensiveness, and defensiveness often leads to blame.
Why are you staring at me like that, Tim? Do you have something to say about me right now? Is this? Are you doing this for a reason? Is that why we're talking about this right now? No, I'm totally kidding. It's so funny because you mentioned these two things, blame and defensiveness, and you're right, they go hand in hand. We recently had a disagreement. This was like a few days ago. And literally, I used the word defensiveness. So I was like, hey, so stop being defensive. You're like, I'm not being defensive. And then you're being defensive. And then I'm not being defensive. And we literally became into a blame defensive conversation, which we kind of laughed at a couple minutes in and realized, okay, this is not serving us at all. We're pointing the finger and being defensive back and forth, back and forth.
Yeah, but it's very hard to like stop and recognize what you're doing, right? Because it feels very natural to want to blame and very natural to defend yourself. It's just a very natural human response in an argument. But I think it is very important to understand, and we'll talk about the reasons why those don't serve a relationship in any way.
I am proud of the work that we've done on this topic because it I feel like it got us out of it very fast. You know, had we not put in the hours, the time, the energy to really hone in and work on our blame and defensive mechanisms, we might have been in that spiral for quite some time. But, mm-hmm. you know, we realize as we're doing it back and forth and saying it back and forth and feeling defensive, and this is not serving us. So it was easy to pull out of it.
Mm-hmm. But it has taken, well, our entire marriage to get to where...
And we're not perfect still,
obviously. We
have
some skill in that area, and oftentimes it takes us quite a while to get to that point. But yes, it is very, very valuable skills if you can learn to practice these. So blame is the occasion where you're assigning responsibility or wrongdoing to something or someone else. We all understand what blame means. And defensiveness is the language or actions used to defend oneself. So let me just say that having these things ever present in a relationship can be very dangerous. We know this by experience. We used to live in the space of blame and defensiveness. They are both detrimental to the bond of a couple and will, without a doubt, tear you apart if not in check. Let's start by talking about blame. And let's explore for just a minute why we blame. Because blaming, as I said before, is a very natural thing for us to do as a human. When something goes wrong, it's very natural for us to immediately look for someone or something to blame. But why do we do that? And I went to one of my favorite people, and we've talked about her before on other podcasts, Brené Brown. She says that the research behind blame shows that blame is a discharge of discomfort and pain. As humans, when we feel pain or discomfort, we want to get rid of it and out of that situation as fast as possible. And blame helps us do that and gives us a sense of control. We blame because it's a lot easier to do that than to actually deal with the pain or discomfort. But just because it's natural to do, does that mean that we should do it? And obviously, the answer, in my opinion, is a resounding
yes.
No.
Oh, no, no, no. Sorry.
Funny.
You're right.
You're funny.
No.
You're funny today.
No, it's so true. What Brené Brown says is so accurate.
Let me just ask a simple question of you, Joel. When I blame you for something, how does it make you feel?
I'm assuming you're going for the...
I want the truth.
You
how
want
about
the
that?
Give
me the truth.
Just give me the truth. I feel attacked, you know, and I think immediately I go into, how is this not my fault? Kind of a running joke around here is, you know, I'm like, I always jokingly, well, that's our kid's fault, or it's your fault, or it's their fault. So I'm always deflecting the...
Is it jokingly?
It's...
Joel's the big blamer in the house.
My gosh. Well, I think if any of our family members were around here, they would absolutely say 100%.
Uh-huh. And your thoughts on that?
I'm constantly deflecting, which I realize does not, I've realized it does not serve us well when we are really in it or we are really having a serious disagreement or a serious discussion. And I realize that whole deflecting thing was worst time to pull that out. So truth be told, I do feel like, oh, I want to deflect. And that immediately makes me feel defensive.
Mm-hmm. When I blame, you get defensive and vice versa. That's absolutely true. And that's one of the reasons why blaming people puts you in this really unhealthy cycle, like this circle that you can't seem to get out of, just as you were saying before, like you blame, defensive, defensive, blame, blame, defensive. You can't seem to find your way out of it. The truth to understand is that blame can really destroy a relationship for that reason. If you're one who is quick to blame, this is something to think about. First, how does it make your partner feel when you're constantly blaming them for things? And as Joel's saying, it naturally makes you feel defensive and you want to defend your side. I know that to be true for myself as well.
I was going to ask you the same question.
Yeah, if you're pointing the finger at me, you better believe I'm going to fight my side. It's not a good tactic of getting anything resolved. Blaming your partner can make them feel shame, helplessness, hurt, defensiveness, as we've said, and that no matter what they do, they can't get it right. If you're offloading your discomfort and pain by way of blame, you are essentially laying the pain on your partner and shifting your discomfort to the one you're supposed to love the most. And I think that's something to really think about, how destructive it can be and how hurtful it can be to the person that you love. It fosters distrust, it fosters resentment and anger, and it's a very unloving thing to do. Now, does it mean that you can't address something that's bothering you about your partner or something that they did that you feel is wrong? Of course not. You absolutely can and should and need to. What it means, though, is that you think about what you're going to say and how you're going to say it and the impact it's going to have.
Here's an example. Okay. Taking a page out of our last podcast, which a lot of people really liked, which was the talk of sex.
Yes.
We're not having sex because you don't want it. How about that?
Yeah, that makes me feel very bad.
Wow. Your whole body just completely changed on there. This is not a true.
I didn't expect that to come out of your mouth.
Well, I was trying to make it a little bit more, you know.
Okay, but why do you got to pick such a touchy subject? Okay, so you made me feel bad.
Okay, but
try again. And then really,
that's
and
not
now
how
what?
I feel. I'm trying to give an example of something that's.
Oh, okay.
Okay. Tammy, can you and I sit down and talk about our sexual needs so that I can make sure we're both on the same page?
Yes, that sounds better. It does still make me feel a little like on edge, like, what is going on here? But it's a heck of a lot better than just what you did before that made me feel really bad about myself.
How about this, sweetie? Boom. Cue the music. Lights go down. Sweetheart, I would love to spend a little bit of time with you talking about, you know.
No, I'm out. That's way too cheesy.
Holy
okay, man. So clearly we got to work on our communication skills. But I think the point that we just made is that it is very important to pay attention to how you are addressing issues in your relationship. If you are choosing to point the finger, odds are you're not going to get the result you want. Bottom line. The other thing to understand if you are one who is quick to blame is that you are the opposite of someone who then takes accountability for themselves. So what are your overall values? Are you living in line with those values? I want to be someone who takes accountability for myself. So the minute I start to blame, I'm realizing I'm not living in alignment with my best version of me. Blame holds us back from change. It says, I'm not willing to grow. And it says, since it's your fault, I don't have to do anything about it. Do you agree with that, Joel?
Yeah. You know, I'm sitting here listening to you say that, and I'm thinking it's so true. And it's such a, I go back, it's like a deflect mechanism. That's what I was saying. Like, I'm going to deflect. Like, hey, it's not my fault. So, and when you're saying it's not my fault, you're basically, I don't have to work on it. Mm-hmm. You're right. You can't really grow from that. Mm-hmm. Rather than taking responsibility, accountability for your actions, you can't grow from that.
Right.
So 100% what you said.
Right. In my opinion, the truth is accountability wins every time.
It hurts
over
though.
Blame.
It does. It hurts. It's hard.
It is by far the much better strategy. This we have learned to be absolutely 100% true in our relationship. It means, here's what I mean by accountability. It means we take ownership of our mistakes. It means we are willing to listen to our partner's concerns. It means we see our partner as a teammate. It doesn't mean that we are accountable for things we don't actually feel we made mistakes in, but it does mean that we are willing to take a long, hard look at ourselves and own up to even the smallest part that we have played in, let's say, an argument. And here's what this is what I found to be true in our arguments is that if I choose to just stay in blame mode, that argument will go on forever. It will get heated. It will get exacerbated. Nothing will get resolved. If I instead choose to stop for a minute, look at myself, point the finger instead towards me and think, okay, what have I done here to help us get to where we are sitting right now? What am I going to do here to help us get out? And own up to that little part. Let's say I was defensive and I own up and I say, you know what? I'm really sorry. I was defensive about that. Let's try again. Or I said something really mean and I, instead of continuing to say mean things, then realize I said something mean and say, you know what? I said something mean. I shouldn't have done that. I feel bad about that. I'm sorry. That's going to take us in a much different direction than if I just continue to sit in blame mode.
You know, it, I hear you say that, and it's, we're calm, we're talking about the subject, we're not in it.
Right.
And when you're in it, it is so hard to pump those brakes and look both ways, basically. You know, you've got to come to a stop and you got to look both ways, take inventory and go, okay, what am I doing?
That's absolutely true. And my best strategy for that is for me to take a minute away from you, because if we're just sitting there in it, or it'll just go on and on. I need to take a step back, sometimes even a night asleep, to get a much better perspective so that I can handle things in a totally different way. You're right. When you're heated, it's very, very hard to stop and take a moment to do that. So for me, it works much better if I can step away from it for a little bit and get a little perspective.
So you're really good about that. I've always admired that about you. You're really good about pausing. And then
I am. I feel like I'm terrible about that.
Well, no, I feel like you're good about it because you say, you like hold up your hand like, I need a moment. And when you do that, I have to grant you that moment. I really have to pause myself and say, okay, for the betterment of us, we need to pause. Mm-hmm. So I know you're doing it for you, but what it does is it pauses us. Mm-hmm. And it really does have me gather my own thoughts. So I'm going to speak for myself. That's my, okay, what am I doing to cause or to continue this? It starts that whole accountability thing for me.
We have learned the importance of accountability, and us taking a step back is really our trigger then to ask ourselves that question. What am I doing that's keeping us here or that's not helping us get out of this situation? What am I going to do to help us get out? What do I need to apologize for? Those are the questions that then, when we're able to stop and ask, we ask.
And this is not something, again, it's still a practice thing, just like everything else we talk about.
Terrible at it sometimes.
Yeah. And we were really bad at it for a very long time until you really got into this accountability thing, which is why I say you're amazing at it. When you really dove into accountability and you started not looking towards me to solve the problem or figure it out or what's the solution, you turned to you and said, what am I doing to foster this? And again, I'm not saying everything is her fault or you know.
Accountability doesn't mean you take blame for everything.
Exactly. Yeah. That's not what I'm trying to say. What I am trying to say is you are focusing on what you were contributing to that. And when you do that, just try that in an argument with somebody. Basically, instead of say, you know, I realize my fault in this is it, or here's what I'm doing wrong.
I'm sorry for this.
Yeah, I'm sorry for it. It is going to completely change the outcome of what you're talking about.
Instead of focusing on what your partner has done wrong, instead point the finger towards yourself. Not pointing the finger in blame towards yourself, but pointing the finger in analyzing what have you done, what can you do? Because I guarantee there's always something that I have contributed to an argument. So starting from the place of apologizing for that, rather than perpetuating and pointing a finger at all the things you did to contribute to that argument, I guarantee it's going to go so much better. So let's talk about how to stop blame. We've already dived into it a little bit. First and foremost, the most important thing is awareness. Are you a blamer? How are you approaching conversations? Because we often can't see ourselves very clearly. We're quite biased about ourselves. So this means getting really curious about our interactions and arguments. It means being willing to look at the hard stuff about ourselves, even when it's painful, and really beginning to pay attention, asking yourself, am I placing blame? Is that my pattern? Is what I'm saying serving this argument, or is it perpetuating it? And that is one of the most important strategies. So the first step is awareness, I think the most important step. The second step, as we were talking about before, is accountability, really being willing to look inside and to take ownership of your mistakes, and then being willing to give a very genuine apology about it. And I mean genuine, not saying apology just for the sake of saying apology and hoping that it's going to solve the problem. I mean genuinely owning up to whatever that little thing is that you can own up to. And usually for me, it's how I've perpetuated the argument. Usually it's because I was defensive, or I said something really mean, or I was, I raised, I yelled at you, or those are the things I often find myself genuinely apologizing for. So that's the blame game. Let's now talk about lesson number 8 of the 10 life-changing marriage lessons. And like I said before, that is defensiveness doesn't serve a marriage. The four horsemen of the apocalypse is a metaphor depicting the end of times. And Dr. John Gottman, a relationship researcher and founder of the Gottman Institute, he uses that metaphor, the four horsemen, to describe communication styles that, listen to this, according to his research, can predict the end of a relationship. By analyzing these four horsemen, and he's done years of research on them, he can predict a relationship's probability for divorce with over a 90% accuracy. Defensiveness is the third of the four horsemen.
Well, it's funny because you, well, I guess not funny, but you said apocalypse in the beginning here. And I'm like, how is apocalypse earning its way into this conversation? But now I see
it's
where that
went. It's the apocalypse yes. of a relationship.
Gotcha.
That's what he calls it. And I'm not so surprised that defensiveness is in there with our experience with defensiveness. It has been extremely destructive to our own relationships, and our worst fights, I believe, are probably usually always due to one of us or both of us being defensive. And in knowing that, knowing what I just said about the research behind defensiveness, then we must also know that it is vital to protect our relationships against defensiveness.
Boom. There it is. 'Cause, I mean, right?
Yes. So why are we so defensive? Well, my guess is that we're probably defensive because when you're being defensive, you're typically feeling attacked, and it's a protection strategy. The problem is that defensiveness only causes more problems. It's not a solution-focused strategy. So one thing I realized back when a time when you and I were really struggling, and you would tell me all the time, you're so defensive all the time. And I would be like, I'm not being defensive. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not defensive. And I really had to do a check with myself, begin checking in, because you would tell me that all the time. And I had to really look within to analyze. Am I being defensive? Is he right? Am I really? Because I don't think I am, but am I? And what I realized was that most of the time when you said that, the answer was I was. I just didn't want to admit it. So I think one thing to talk about just really quickly is, how do we know if we're being defensive?
Well, clearly it's when your partner tells you you're being defensive.
Well, in our case, that tends to be true, but the moment you tell me I'm being defensive, I'm going to be defensive about being defensive.
Yeah, very slippery slope.
So it's not really helpful to tell your partner they're being defensive. However, it is very important for you to know if you yourself are a defensive person or if you're using those defensive strategies in your arguments. So some of the ways to know if you're being defensive, you're not really listening to your partner. And instead, what I notice happens is that in my head, I'm planning my defense. So you can be talking to me and I'm not really paying attention to anything you're saying. I'm just plotting out how I'm going to argue against it. And clearly, that's not really a very good strategy. It makes me feel good, but in the end, it really doesn't serve our relationship. It doesn't serve our arguments. Also, you're justifying your actions all the time. You're pointing the finger a lot, making a lot of excuses and arguments, and making the other person question their own sanity about whether what they're saying is true or not. Those are some clues as to whether or not you might be being defensive. Do you notice that about yourself sometimes?
Without a doubt.
When you're being defensive, what do you notice is happening?
I think for me, what I notice is happening is that I think, how in the world can she not see everything that I'm trying to explain to her? I go into this this mode where I literally think like, I cannot believe you don't get this. And then, you know, as we develop, as we go through it and come out on the other side, I realize, oh my gosh, I was just being absolutely defensive towards letting anything come in. And like you say, I wasn't paying attention to what you were trying to tell me. I just had this wall up of, this is clearly all your fault. Mm-hmm. And, you know, almost like, what do I even need to listen to you for when clearly you're not listening to me?
Right. Just standing so strong on your own side, you're not willing to hear anything on the other side.
Yeah, it's like I just have a wall built.
Yeah.
And that's what happens.
I think that's a very good analogy, because that's essentially what defensiveness is, right? You know, kind of building the wall to protect yourself. Those are some clues as to whether or not you might be being defensive, or maybe you're just overall kind of a defensive person. And if you notice that about yourself, then the question is, why and how is defensiveness detrimental to relationship? Why is that such a factor in determining whether or not a relationship might wind up in divorce? And I think, as I was saying before, one of the most important things to think about is that defensiveness is not a solution-based strategy. And Dr. Gottman's research backs up the fact that all defensiveness does is it perpetuates situations. It does not resolve them in any way. So if your relationship is sitting in a place where you are on your side and I am on mine, and we are defending our sides against each other, there is very little chance that we're going to be able to resolve anything. We've tried defensiveness. It doesn't work. All it does is going to perpetuate a situation. It too, as we were saying about blame, it causes hurt, frustration, increased anger. It makes people around you feel like they can't talk to you about things. And that's what you would say to me a lot, is I don't feel like I can talk to you because when I do, you get so defensive. And that is really hard to hear. I don't want to hear that. But when I get down to it, it's true. If I'm in defensive mode, I'm not listening. And if I'm not listening, then you certainly can't feel like you can talk to me and share your concerns with me. It doesn't lead to resolutions. And for me, I feel really bad when I'm feeling defensive. I know I'm not being the best version of myself at all. It kind of brings out the worst in me.
It's funny because I'm listening to how you're talking about it, and you're taking complete accountability of your actions, and you're not the only one, but you certainly, I think if you and I laid it out, I think I blame more, you know, and you are defensive more. If maybe, okay, was that a blame? You should have seen the look I just got.
Well, let me just say, I don't fully agree with that, but we can talk about it more. I'm willing to hear your side.
I obviously have my bouts with being defensive too, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I think I point more fingers than you do. And I think that you go on the defensive more than I do. Wouldn't you agree to that, honey?
I feel like that used to be me, but I don't feel like that's so much the case anymore. I feel like I've worked very hard to become aware of the fact that I tend to lean into defensiveness. And even though that may be my initial response, I've worked hard to recognize it and find strategies to work my way out of it. So I don't think it takes hold like it used to.
And I totally agree with that. It's part of what I was saying earlier. You know, you hold up the pause button quite often if we're starting to get off track, if you feel our conversation is just spiraling. Mm-hmm. So you're really good about hitting that pause button. And that pause button's not just for blame, but it's for being defensive too. Mm-hmm. So you're starting to feel those feelings where you're not paying attention. And so I need a moment.
Yeah.
It's like, I need a moment.
So defensiveness, we recognize it's very destructive to relationship. It's one of the indicators that your relationship may be headed to divorce. If it is a lead factor in your interactions with each other, then the question is, how do we stop it? And I think, just as with blame, the very first thing is to become aware. And that was my first step. I had to recognize that that was actually what was happening and get really curious about what I'm feeling, what's fueling what I'm feeling, how I'm reacting to what I'm feeling, what's coming out of my mouth as a reaction. And it's difficult work, but I think it's the most important step in rectifying both blame and defensiveness is really getting curious about yourself and becoming aware of your feelings and your actions as a result of those feelings.
So does it help when I point it out to you that you're being defensive?
It doesn't. I said that before. It does not. It makes me defensive when you do that.
Just listen to the tone in her voice.
But you did say it a lot, and I don't know when or how, but at some point it began to trigger the question in me that, like I said, I'm asking myself, he says that all the time. Why do you say that? What am I doing that makes you say that about me? And when I'm doing the inner work and diving in and asking myself those questions, I realized most of the time you're right. I was being defensive. I am being defensive. I just didn't realize that was happening. I thought I was just trying to win an argument, you know, like just telling you my side. But arguments aren't about winning. And we've learned that that doesn't help to try to win your side. We're not going to get anywhere with that. So I had to develop new strategies in our interactions with each other that were completely different than how we used to argue. Do you feel like I've made improvements in that area? You've got me concerned now.
No, baby, of course you have. Yeah, okay. You know that wholeheartedly.
As I was saying with blame, I think we often don't see ourselves very well. So stopping and recognizing our faults is a very difficult thing to do. And it's hard to admit. And it's very humbling to admit. And sometimes, you know, you feel embarrassed and ashamed for the fact that you acted that way. But you don't have to continue acting that way. That's when you can begin to make some changes, when you recognize, okay, there's some work that I need to do in that area. And I know you and I both have recognized a lot of our flaws when it comes to arguments specifically, and making big adjustments in how we are shifting our interactions with each other. So the first step is awareness. The second thing I think that is really important when it comes to stopping defensiveness is learning how to put your ego aside and listen. Just really listen.
I'll use the example of, you know, train on the tracks. How do you stop the train in order to realize that, you know, you're going in the wrong direction?
For me, it's just inner dialogue. I'm hearing myself planning my defense. I'm not listening. I need to really hear what he's saying. I'm going to set all that stuff aside and I'm going to really try to hear what you are telling me. And I'm not saying that that's easy to do, but the more aware I become and have become of my tendencies, the easier it gets for me to begin to set that ego aside and focus on listening. And really that's the goal overall in an argument is to listen to each other. That's the only way that you're going to resolve anything is if we're willing to hear each other's side. So I think it's a really important step in putting defensiveness aside. The other step, and goes hand in hand with the ego and listening, is being able to put yourself in your partner's shoes. Step inside their shoes for a moment and try to see things from their point of view. You may point something out about me that I don't like and I immediately want to defend myself, but the real goal is to hear what you're trying to tell me about that and how it does bother you and what adjustments can I make or how can we talk about how to rectify the situation is a much better strategy than me just being defensive about how I feel about it and telling you you're wrong and I'm right.
So let me try to give a little example of this in practice.
Mm-hmm.
So recently we were finishing up our dinner. And I literally make the comment that, hey, I want our kids to clean up since you made dinner. I emptied the dishwasher earlier in the day and, you know, kids just showed up to eat. And we're a really good family about all pitching in. But I said, hey, why don't you kids, you just clean up? And you immediately made a response, which then made me feel defensive. Like, wait a minute, I'm trying to speak to them and now they're on your side and I'm feeling very defensive towards you. And I walked out of the room. I don't know if you noticed that, but I walked out of the room and came back. And what I was doing was saying, okay, I understand what Tammy's trying to do. She's trying to make it seem like we all pitch in. Nobody feels like they're doing any one thing by themselves. And I came back in the room and I feel like my attitude was a little bit different. But I had to take that moment of awareness that I was feeling defensive, a little bit frustrated, and realize that. And I was literally just saying, I get what Tammy's trying to do. I know what she's trying to do. She's not trying to be offensive towards me or make me feel less. She's trying to make it seem like we're all pitching in together. We didn't have a debrief of that conversation, but what, am I correct in that?
Well, I appreciate that you did that. Yes, that's always the case with dinner and cleanup. I do like it to feel like a family affair, that we all pitch in together, that we're a team, that we're a family, you know, that does it together. And you tend to have the thing where, well, the kids just need to do it. And I tend to...
That's why we have kids, though. You know what I'm saying?
I tend to go to the side of wanting to do it together. And we have had some situations about that. But what I think that's a really good example of, as you said, of putting yourself in my shoes. And what it also points out is that a lot of times when we're having arguments, we tend to make up our own stories about what we think the person's doing. So you initially are thinking, well, I'm just trying to shut you down and not value your thoughts or feelings in any way. And I'm just taking the kids'
gang
side.
Up on me.
Yeah, I'm just taking the kids' side. And what you did was you took a moment, and when you put yourself in my shoes, then you realize that that's not what's happening at all, that I have a completely different motivation than what initially triggered you. And it was able to turn your thought process or your attitude about it. It doesn't mean I was right or wrong or anything about it. It just meant that you didn't continue down the road of being angry and defensive about it, and you were able to switch. So I think that that's a really important point to make. We do that a lot. We tell our own stories about what we think each other is saying, and very often it's not true. That happens so often when you and I are arguing.
Yeah.
And I'll just go off like, I can't believe you thought that or you're saying that. And he'll be like, wait a minute, what? It's not what I was trying to say. That's not what I meant. But I'm like 100 yards down the road in this story that I think you were trying to say. That is a lot of what causes defensiveness. We're not really listening. We're just taking the information, making up our own story about it and running away with it. So if we can stop for a minute, take a breath, put ourselves in our partner's shoes, it gives us a whole different perspective about what the situation might actually be. And it helps us find some compassion. And that's what you did. You found some compassion for me and how I deal with things differently than you do. Even though we didn't talk about the situation, it resolved it in a different way than it's resolved it in the past. Yeah. So thank you for that.
Well, gosh, you're just trying to keep us a cool core family unit. And I just want the kids to clean up.
I know. And I appreciate that too. I know. Lastly, just as we were saying with blame, own up to your own part. Be willing to step into some accountability. Be willing to apologize. Be willing to recognize, yep, I'm being defensive. I need to own up to it, apologize for it, and make adjustments accordingly. So the bottom line, blaming and defensiveness, as you can see very clearly, and as Brené Brown and John Gottman agree, they do not serve a relationship in any way. They are huge indicators of divorce and relationship unhappiness. So it's time to check in. Are you a blamer? Are you always feeling defensive during discussions? If any of this is ringing true for you, then I hope that some of the strategies that we talked about can be a good start toward improving communication in your marriage, finding strategies to adjust your arguments so that they don't run away with you, building and maintaining trust, and just creating a much happier and healthier environment in your relationship is going to come as a result of putting aside blame and defensiveness. So I'm going to work on that really hard this week. Are you, Joel?
Like I said, you do a great job.
But it's a good reminder for us to sit and talk about all this. And it's always good for us. And we're like, okay, this is something we need to always make sure is at the forefront. All these strategies that we've been sharing over these many weeks. It's been good reminders for me, I'll say, of these important strategies and lessons that we've learned and how to make sure that they are always at the forefront of our relationship.
You're right. It is it's refreshing for us too, to great reminders of, oh my gosh, we've come so far and yet we still have so far to go. Mm-hmm. You know, we're still going through the process ourselves, learning ourselves and practicing ourselves too. So it wonderful reminders.
For sure.
So for nothing else, you guys are just listening to us. Like we've said in the past, do our own therapy. Thank you so much.
We love it. And we don't have to pay you. Like, this is great.
This is great.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for letting us lay on your couch. And we appreciate you listening. And tune in next time for the next lesson in the 10 life-changing marriage lessons. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you next time on the Married and Naked podcast.